Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, we want to brace it with love and a powerful dose of hope, because we are in the throes, you all, of a, I would call it, democracy on life support. And the only thing that's going to help us now is who I'm calling the fourth branch of government, and that is us citizens, because we can't call on the courts like we used to. We can't even call on the legislative branch like we used to. So it's no sense of going to look for somebody. It is us, y'all. So this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And this is a place where we connect dots, where we introduce people who are on battlefields and connect those dots, because we are not in some isolated fight, you all. This is a fight that people all over the country are waging against the current regime. But this regime looks like other regimes across the globe. And so we are all fighting, and hopefully those struggles connect at some point. But we're going to do our part here in the St. Louis metropolitan area. And so, yeah, there's just, you know, many, many, many things going on. And we still know that there's genocide in Gaza. We still have a 34-count felon in the White House who is wreaking havoc on not just our economy and our political structure, but the world economy. And so I think we're going to start to see some different things from allies who now have to protect their own governments and their own economies because of what Trump is doing. And so they are expecting the citizens of this country to put him in check. We're doing the best we can. And we got some things, what I call the battlefield now, that's important, and that's the electoral battlefield. We have a primary coming up next Tuesday, but we have not been just looking at that. We have been far reaching to looking at like the November elections, so that we know we are positioning for that. And some of the things that are on ballot next week are going to affect what's on the ballot next this November. So we want to be woke, we want to be active, we want to be engaged. So I know I've gotten lots of calls and texts about you all getting all this email and text calls and mailers from Wesley Bell, mostly, you know, attack ads against Corey Bell. Some of you all have been worried about Mavis Thompson, who now seems to be the last standing black elected official citywide in the St. Louis. But we're not going to talk about candidates today, and that's not because they are not important. It's because on different ballots, those candidates change. And so what we're asking you to do is to do the due diligence to find out enough about those candidates so that you know that you're making an informed decision about that. And that means going to their websites. It means going to some of the candidates' forums. It means talking with neighbors. All of that is part of the information gathering. Today, we're going to talk about the amendments and propositions, because those are going to be statewide, a lot of them. Not Prop M, but the rest of them, the amendments will be statewide. And there's so much confusion about them. And so we have some of my friends who are deeply involved in all of this to help us sort through it. So we have Mevy Mead, who is with Protect Majority Rule. Hey, Mevy, welcome back to the show. Jamie Johnson, who is the executive director of People Not Politicians, who you've seen before when we were thinking about all this redistricting stuff. And we have Christina Ingracio, who wears many hats. And you might remember her as being a former alderperson of the Sixth Ward. But all of these women wear hats, multiple hats at different times. Even if their official position says one thing, they have always been in the community. And so that's what I appreciate about them. They got their hands and fingers and toes on the pulse of the people. So welcome, everybody. We're going to start with Christine first, because she's got to get back on the battlefield. But Prop M was one that I got a lot of questions about. And I didn't know enough about it myself, kept trying to do a little bit of research. And so I found somebody that actually worked on that for you all. And so, Christine, lay out what Prop M is about and what people can talk about the language first, because we always know that sometimes the language is confusing, deliberately, intentionally, so that you don't vote the right way. So this is not a show where I'm trying to do equal opportunity stuff. So if you want to say vote for M, feel free to do that. But if you want to just give us why it came about and this the importance of it, what the language says and what people can be looking for.
Sure thing. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here. Prop M sort of lacks the flashy headlines and mail in your mailbox, but it is foundational work in the city of St. Louis to update our charter. Most of the language that's included in Prop M was delivered by the Charter Commission back in 2024, 2025 to the Board of Aldermen, and it did not pass the finish line. And so we brought it back. Alderman Matt Devoti sponsored the legislation. It was sponsored by quite a few elected officials down at the board, and it stands for modernization. It really kind of declutters and future-proofs some of the things in the charter. I think there are many places where salaries are mentioned, specific salaries. So we know that that needs to change quite a bit more frequently than charter changes allow. So this would change salaries that are at like $4,000 or $5,000. Some of them haven't been changed since the charter was passed in 1914 to fall under the compensation ordinance, which is in practice what's actually happening now. Some city departments were named things that may have been appropriate at the time in 1914, but now seem pretty rough and honestly derogatory. Some of the departments we no longer have. For example, we have the Department of Health, but not the Department of Health and Hospitals. So removing some of that language. For all the English teachers out there, standardizing capitalization and the way numbers are formatted, it was all over the place in terms of those things. And then taking out some of the things that are no longer allowed for us because of the state. So for example, residency in the city of St. Louis, if you were a civil service employee, used to be required. We're no longer allowed to require that employees in the city of St. Louis live in the city of St. Louis. And then lastly, it's lovely to be with all women here today. Every single gendered reference in the charter only mentions he, him, or he. So this removes gender altogether and just replaces it with the actual titles. In terms of like future-proofing, we're not really sure. Like right now, I think we all have some idea that people are utilizing genders outside of he, him, or she, her, but we don't know what that's going to look like in the future. So to the extent possible, using they or really just using the titles themselves. And happy to take any questions.
You know what? I'm thinking that some of that sounds cosmetic or corrections based on history. Like some things have changed, obviously, like residency. What substantively has changed that people should be concerned about?
In my mind, there's nothing that's been changed substantively. This was really designed to, like I said, it's not flashy. It's not going to create probably very many headlines, but it's just sort of necessary work. It can be very confusing if you are trying to figure out something in the city. There are sections about the fact that the city maintained hospitals, some very nitty-gritty details about things that just really don't belong in the charter. The charter is overly complicated. And some of the things, as I mentioned, like salaries and other items, really should be dealt with in ordinances because we know that it's very difficult to get on the amount of votes you need to get. You have to have two-thirds of the residents who show up to vote that day vote to move something forward to change the charter. The charter is more like a constitution. And so some of these things honestly just belong in ordinance or are just so outdated. For example, like calling support for mental health facilities, insane asylums, things that just are very cringy to read now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask a question while Jamie and Mevy are thinking about a question to ask you for more clarity. But I was a proponent of going through that charter. I mean, it's old, antiquated, for all the reasons that you've said. I have to say, I was disappointed with the process itself. I thought it was going to be more robust in that it engaged many more people. Because this is the thing, I'm now on the thing about having civic lessons with people like you all who come on to like talk about like what these things mean, what parts of civic government do you represent, and to tell people like about that, because we are really ignorant. I'm talking about we citizens are really ignorant about our government, about government positions, what authority have they don't have. And I can recall going through that charter, and I was getting calls from some of the elected officials and say, Jamala, you need to do something with your people. They asking ridiculous questions because they don't know what's going on. And these were like people that are supposed to be the woke folks. So if you don't have them understanding it and then creating chaos in the process, then that's not a good thing. But I just know that people don't understand the charter. And when you are working on legislative stuff and all of a sudden somebody says, well, that's going to violate the city charter, and well, what's that? Now you got to stop everything and figure out how to circumvent that, or how to include it, or how to respect it. Because at some point, I'm assuming citizens thought all of that was hunky dory, and it worked for 1914 or whenever that was. And now we do need to modernize that. And so it sounds like, and this is because I think most people thought the process was dead and didn't really go anywhere. M is taking some of that and saying, we're going to put it into the proposition so that what people have said so far is going to mean some change. So what did you think about the process? I know it's always some good things and some things that could have been done differently. And will we go through another one? Because it seems to me everything didn't get cleared up. It was so much. That's the other thing. It was so much to look at that it was just almost impossible to do
Yes.
that.
Yes, definitely some incredible lessons learned. If you're not familiar, former Alderwoman Annie Rice put creating a charter commission under the charter to, that got sent to the ballot. And so the 2024 process was the inaugural process for a charter commission. And to your point, there were the amount of work was absolutely incredible. I think in hindsight, a year is just not long enough. I had subsequently to that passing at the board, and I served as an ex officio member of the commission on behalf of President Green. And there are some other places that take up to a 2-year process in order to move some of these things forward. We also had some confusion because at the time that the ordinance was passed to create the Charter Commission, it was our understanding that the, well, I think some people's understanding that the Charter Commission would send those recommendations directly to the Board of Elections. That's not what ended up happening. The city councilor, belief was that we needed to have those go to the Board of Aldermen and then to the ballot. So some things that they wanted to move forward just didn't have the political support needed in order to get it voted out and onto the ballot. And so I think the fact that we've started to talk about it is really helpful. One of the points that you brought up that I think definitely got lost sight of a bit was way more comprehensive public input and outreach. There is basically not a budget for the Charter Commission, which I think is something that would likely need to change if we really want to do meaningful work. And then I think a couple different schools of thought, like right now we're working on a couple of different things in order to like just kind of decide whether or not we think city voters would like to do more piecemeal things that we can hopefully deliver to them in ways that make sense that they understand versus just completely redoing the entire charter.
Yeah, I kept thinking maybe we should have looked at prioritize the stuff and then, did it by chunks and go like over a period of time. So yeah, lessons learned. I think the big thing was to have citizens involved, and there were citizens who were on part of the commission, and then they brought other folks to play. So yeah, I thought it was a good start. So anything else, maybe, and Jamie, that we need to get from Christine before she has to leave us? But that was helpful, definitely, Christine, helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I learned a lot. Thank you, Christine. I'm wondering who is going to see M on their ballot, because I don't want to leave this show with people thinking like, oh my gosh, if M isn't on my ballot, there's something wrong or right or whatever. Could you clear that up?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, everybody that takes or gets a ballot in the city of St. Louis to vote, that will be it's a citywide issue, so that will be on your ballot on Tuesday.
Yeah. Thanks for that, because I helped my mom in Kansas City with her absentee ballot and it wasn't on there. And I said, don't worry, it's going to differ from congressional district to, Senate district. All of it is going to be different. So, but yeah, that's a good question, Mary.
Yeah, always helpful. If you get mailed a sample ballot or you're able to access that information online or ask somebody that you know, so you're prepared to vote on Tuesday.
Right, and this is all towards your voter plan. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Christine, and we'll see you soon. I'm sure we'll see you Tuesday as we're out there and about trying to make sure these folks do not steal the elections.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I couldn't stay longer. Thanks for the invitation to be here. And Jamie and Mevy, always nice to see both of you as well.
All righty. So I'm gonna move to this whole proposition thing because I think. And we had a conversation maybe about this offline. I'm like saying they got some clever TV ads that's really confusing, like that damn donkey. I said that was pretty clever. Then somebody said, oh no, that's for the. I said, oh no, we're supposed to be voting no on that. So amendments 4 and 5. I think I couldn't get anybody here to talk about 3. That is the abortion rights thing, and that's definitely confusing because we were asking people last time to vote yes, now we're saying vote no. And huh, what? You got to be woke to stay on top of this stuff, don't you? I mean, really, these people like make it really hard to vote. Just vote. So what I know about this one, remember voters, when you voted yes, that was that we wanted it. And now they repealed it. So now they put the repeal on the ballot, and now we need to vote no. Is that you all's understanding?
Correct. For Amendment 3, we're talking about, right, Jamala?
Yes.
Yeah. And also, people should know that that won't appear on your primary ballot. It'll be in November. So it will be on your November ballot. It will be Amendment 3. And Amendment 3 is reinstating an abortion ban. So if you don't want an abortion ban, if you want abortion to be legal in November, you should vote no on 3. And that's all you need to know.
I'll add to that that if you feel like somebody else's abortion is not your business, you should vote no as well. Even if you
Yes.
personally, have different beliefs, but you believe in pro-choice, you should also vote no.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we'll have a chance to really educate people on that one for the next few months. So let's get to 4 and 5 because they are coming in a group. And your organization, Protect Majority Rule, is particularly, I think, it would be interested in the one that has us really given up our right to petition the government. And so I just did my column this week for the St. Louis American because I think that people don't understand the existing tools of democracy that we have at our disposal that didn't come because, government says, oh, let's empower our citizens. Those were fought for tooth and nail. And so we're using them now and we're using them well. And that's why they are under attack. So, Mammy, talk about if what happens, well, first of all, what is the ballot initiative that allows us to keep doing ballot initiatives? And under that is, referendums, the propositions, all of those are citizen driven. And that's how we got expansion of Medicaid. That's how we got the increases in minimum wage. This is how we've been able to make the government do what it hasn't done for us. And so it's important that we maintain that tool. So talk a bit about what that amendment is for and why we have to do it.
Sure. Yeah. So voters all across the state on, well, who have started voting, right? We're all starting to vote. Or if you go to the polls on August 4th, on your ballot will be a set of amendments, or yeah, and so amendment four, if you aren't planning to vote, I would argue you should go to the polls to make your voice heard on amendment four. And what I would recommend you do is vote no on amendment four. What it is the legislature, the politicians in Jefferson City have been mad about what we have done on Medicaid expansion and a number of other things. And so instead of arguing their on the point of what they didn't like, they didn't win. They fought. They wanted to not expand Medicaid, for example. We, the voters, said, wait, no, myself, my family, my neighbors, they deserve healthcare. And that can be provided through Medicaid expansion. And the politicians and their special interests didn't like that. And so instead of contesting on the facts, what Amendment 4 is changing the rules. It's moving the goalposts when it comes only to citizen-initiated constitutional change. And so the legislator, the politicians in Jefferson City can also propose constitutional changes. And that's what this is. This came from the legislature. This did not come from the people. It came from the legislators, who are basically sore losers. And what do sore losers do? Instead of, you know, going and training and trying to win the game next time, they try and change the rules or argue over the rules. So what it's happening with Amendment 4 is it would throw out our over 100-year history of citizen-led direct democracy and majority rule, and instead replace it with this system that would make it nearly impossible for any citizen-initiated constitutional change to pass. So right now, if you propose and you were able to qualify to get something on the ballot to change our constitution, which is an enormously complicated process that involves lots and lots of effort from all across the state to get signatures, to gather, to qualify, to follow all the rules that are in place, it's a rigorous process. And then it gets to the ballot. And just like every other election in this state and has been in effect for 100 years, it would say, just for this niche thing, citizen-initiated ballot measures, you would not only need a statewide majority, you would need a majority in every single one of our 8 congressional districts. And what that means is that all people who don't like that measure would have to do is focus on one congressional district, dump a bunch of money into it, and get a very small proportion of the state to vote against it, and you tank it for the rest of the state. So it is upending, destroying, tearing up our constitutional right to majority rule. And that is why I'm running the campaign with a bunch of other people. And frankly, it's a bunch of ideologically different people. It's Republicans, independents, Democrats have used this process over this 100 years, and they want to preserve it. And that's why we're arguing and suggesting and encouraging people to vote no on 4 on August 4th or whenever you're voting.
So before I bring Jamie in, because I do want her to talk about how majority rule is affecting the congressional maps, you talked about the nonpartisan group that you all pulled together under this current coalition effort. And I'm thinking, don't the Republicans know that they have also used this? And isn't this going to shoot them in the foot? What is wrong with them?
Oh,
in 25 words or less.
I can't begin to imagine why the motives, et cetera, except for it's rigging the rules. So like I said, if people don't feel like they have the resources or the winning ideas, and other people are putting forth ideas that are popular when the politicians won't act, I think it's that. It's a way, it's all about power. Jamal, you and I have talked for ages about power. I know Jamie studies power too. It is a power grab by politicians who want to consolidate all the power, But our constitution and our history and what is in the fiber of our being in Missouri, from what I understand by talking to Missourians and researching Missourians, believe that people deserve the right to improve our lives, our communities' lives through this process, which is arduous, but they deserve that right. And what Amendment 4 is doing is trying to trick you into giving it up. Don't give it up. Say no to 4.
So, Jamie, we've gone through some of this in terms of maintaining majority rule as we've looked at the map that's being challenged. And we know that the majority of people have lived with this notion that we only are going to look at redistricting maps after the census, because that's going to give you the most up-to-date information about population shifts and whatever. And these folks just completely disregarded that and said, no, we're going to do it whenever we want to. And now we got, again, citizens having to come together to say, we're going to do something about this map. So talk about that campaign and also where we are with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now we're kind of in a holding pattern. What I will say to Mevy's point, both of these citizen driven actions or resources have been available in this state for 118 years. Yeah. 118 years. And so, you know, that what that tells me is that 118 years ago, the people of Missouri didn't trust their politicians either. So, you know, we can say this entire history has been rooted in the fact that the unspoken agreement between the people and the politicians is we give you the right to represent us, if we give you the ability to represent us, but we need to have a check on you in case you get too high and mighty. We have reached a point where they are too high and mighty, and they are grabbing for more power, and they are grabbing power away from the people. And, you know, the welfare of the people is the supreme law in Missouri, right?
That's what's the building down in Jeff City.
That is the inscription on the building. And so our politicians are not acting in a way that supports that foundational piece of what Missouri is, what Missouri's constitution is, what Missouri's legislature is supposed to be. And so this is the people rising up to take power back from that, or stop, I should say, to stop the politicians from taking away our power. And so that's where we are in the history. In terms of the referendum, we're, like I said, we're in a holding pattern. The last effort, the Supreme Court said in the Magard case that the Constitution, they don't know, it's hard to say which map is in effect until the process of certification has been completed. That process includes us turning in petitions and signatures. We've done that. Them counting the signatures and verifying the signatures. That has been done. The only thing that has not been done is the certification by the Secretary of State. At this point, the Secretary of State has all the information that he needs. Every single county in the state of Missouri has completed the verification of signatures, whether it's a county an actual elections board for that county, or a county clerk's office, right? Every single county in the state of Missouri has completed their verification process. The Secretary of State has a constitutional deadline of August 4th, 5 p.m., in order to issue a certificate of either sufficiency or insufficiency. So that is what the next step will be. The Secretary of State has already indicated that he is going to wait until that deadline, even though he has everything he needs to make a decision today. He actually had everything he needed to make a decision months ago, and could avoid some of the chaos that will ensue when it gets certified in a couple of weeks.
In a week, really, less than a week, yeah.
Yeah, but the issue is now is that they are using the 2025 maps, the HB1 maps, the one that we are doing the referendum on, they're using those maps in the primary election. But I want to remind everybody that being used or in use, does not necessarily equal in effect. The court was very clear that the process of certification determines which map is in effect. The process of certification is being held up by an elected official. The process of certification could be completed at this point, including the lawsuits, because, you know, obviously we have an obligation or a right to challenge if the Secretary of State decides to declare insufficiency on grounds that do not include the number of signatures or the validity of those signatures. So if that is, if those are the reasons he says that the referendum is in, or the petition is insufficient, okay, we don't have the number of signatures we need, or we don't have the number of valid signatures we need. Okay, game over. That's not the case. That's not the case. So any other reason for insufficiency, we can challenge in court. We can actually challenge those too, but, you know, we know that those aren't the cases. So any additional reason for insufficiency, we can challenge in court. And the Supreme Court was again clear that if once the process of certification includes the certification by the Secretary of State, or, you know, certification either sufficient or insufficient, but also includes the completion of legal proceedings. So once that process is done, we will know which map should have been used for the primary, and we will also know which map will be used in November for the elections in November.
So yeah. One of the things that you made me think about is that the reason that this man is waiting till August 4th at 5 o'clock is because he doesn't have a damn reason. So he's just going to take it right up to the last minute, knowing that he doesn't have a leg to stand on legally. And so it just really, it just goes back to a point that both of you all have said. It's like, we really are, I won't necessarily call it a civil war. It's an uncivil war, and it's based on them breaking the contract with the American people of how the Constitution is supposed to go. So why are we in 2026 fighting with our government for things that are already on the books that have been memorialized, legislative, and sometimes even adjudicated, because they want more power? And so I just really want our listeners to understand where we are in this democracy, where we have people that are violating our constitutional rights, violating their own authority, but still don't seem to be having a care in the world about that. Now, that man ought to be ashamed of himself. And I know this is a shameless party, but still, we have to make them ashamed. We have to have some accountability, make them accountable. And so to that point, when we talk about elections matter, and the elections of a Secretary of State really is important right now, when the President of the United States has asked Secretaries of State to share voter information with him, and that probably is going to be a no-brainer for those states that have, you know, Republican secretaries of state. So how are we guarding ourselves against that, Jamie, or is there any guard against that? Because he'll say the president told me and I have to do what the president says, and probably under other circumstances people would say, oh yeah, that's not a problem, you know. But these folks are out of control. They're in a different universe. They're not doing things that are interest. So it's very different now that the president is asking you to do something. Yeah, what is the guardrails for that?
Absolutely. The we have lost focus on the welfare of the people. That is the message that I will say going into this election. People need to understand. You need to find out if your elected representative who is running for re-election or these new folks who are primarying are concerned, actually concerned with the welfare, with your welfare, with your well-being as a citizen of the district that they want to represent. That's in candidate, you know, research. That's the main question that you should be asking yourself and asking these candidates. Are you actually concerned with the welfare of the people, or is this a power move for you? Now, I know how folks might answer that question, but you also need to pay attention to their actions. So matching their actions to their words, aligning those, making sure those things are in alignment, looking at the votes that they've taken if they are an incumbent. Aside from that, it's just we are just going away and further away from what the purpose of this style of government is. It is a representative democracy, which means those individuals have the responsibility to listen to not only the people who voted for them, but every single person in that district. And hearing their voice and understanding what their needs are. I will say this, I don't think anybody has not heard me say this at any point. When I was elected, I served in the legislature for 2 years for my district. There were times where I voted for with the district, with my constituents, against my own conscience, against my own desire to see for what the outcome would be. There were times where I took a vote on the House floor, and then I had to get up and walk out of the room and walk and breathe and calm myself down because this is what I heard from my constituents. This is what they want, even though it doesn't align with my personal belief. And I think we've gotten away from that. I don't know if I answered the question, Jamla, but
No, you
I felt
did.
like I
You
needed to
did.
get
You
into
did.
that a little
You
bit.
did. But I'm also looking at the whole, I mean, the fundamental majority rule, it's so dear to what we are used to. And in the last couple of years, I'm talking about from Missouri, we've seen majority rule just get stomped on, dismissed. I mean, I think about the state takeover of the police department. That clearly, the majority, not just the majority of citizens in St. Louis said yes, but the majority of Missourians said yes. See, they did that little trick because they thought, rural Missouri was going to say no, but they said, yeah, people should control their own police department. They said, no, they don't. Y'all don't know what you're talking about. They did it with abortion. They did it with paid sick leave. It's like, wait a minute. People are saying, the majority of people are saying they want this. How is it that a few folks in a particular party then get the power, have the power to just dismiss that? And so maybe what is the folks that are in the majority rule, how are they countering what those questions are and what people's sentiments are? Because what happens with some people is they just get disgusted and say, I'm not going to participate, and then they disengage. And that's exactly what they want us to do, and we can't do that. We can't let them do that. What is the narrative or argument that you all are using to say, no, yes, they did that, but
Correct. And that's thank you for queuing that question up, Jamala and Jamie. Love how you have set up your points as well. I was thinking exactly that. Ooh, people tuning in might be like, whoa, this seems like bad politicians everywhere grabbing up power. Ugh, I'm going to tune out. What I want to say is they wouldn't be trying these things if they didn't believe in our power. We are they're only going through all of this, spending all the money, spending all the time, potentially putting some of their primary elections at stake in the conservative side over candidates disagreeing. And some Republican primary candidates are saying, wait, we should not overturn majority rule. I believe in that. So they're afraid of the power of the people. And that's because we have exercised it, especially in the past 10 years, to do things that help us, help our communities, help our neighbors, and stop some of these power grabs. And so what I am thinking, people should feel it's almost a compliment when they're coming after your power, because you have so much power, they're trying to trick you into giving it away. And they don't want to, they're hiding the ball. Like they're afraid of voters on issues. They're not afraid of voters in partisan elections because they have their ways of sort of moving people into camps and gerrymandering the maps, and they're trying to do that on steroids. But what they're really afraid of is when voters in Missouri contemplate an issue, They do so in a very rigorous way. We are the show me state. People from all areas of the state think about the issue, think about its impact on their lives, and they vote for positive change. And that is terrifying to the current leadership, political leadership in Missouri, and more importantly, the special interests who pay and control them. And so a vote against Amendment 4 is a vote for your power. It's a very positive, uplifting thing that you can do to put those politicians in their place and demonstrate that power. They wouldn't be coming for all of this if we don't have power, and they don't want to talk about that. I do. Use your power on August 4th or up to August 4th to say no to these shenanigans and hold on to our power, and we'll show them together. And then we'll move on to use that power to create a family supporting economy, to protect voting rights, to protect healthcare, all the things that we know we need to do. And they're terrified of us doing it. And so go and be powerful. Up to August 4th, that's what this is about. And you should celebrate your ability to put your stamp no on 4. I'm keeping my power. Sorry, pal.
Yeah, right. No, sorry, I go ahead, Dame. I was going to say, I agree with that.
I can piggyback on that and just say the same thing. Like, the gerrymander is a way to dilute powerful communities. This is the hill I will die on. Kansas City is an economic driver to the state of Missouri. Why would we not have one district that is dedicated to Kansas City as an economic driver of the state? So you want Kansas Cityans' money, but you don't want their vote. You don't want their influence. You don't want their ideas. You don't want their communities to have a dedicated representative. The gerrymandering is also one of the ways in which people who want to predetermine the outcome goes about it. They say, okay, well, this voting block of people is very powerful. We need to split that up so that we can and push them into other communities and dilute their voting block. That's what a gerrymander is. It is a way for the politicians to draw the maps in a way that allows them to determine the outcomes. And that's not what we need as a state. That's not what we need as a country. But we do need to listen to people and understand where those powerful communities are. And a lot of times we don't recognize as individuals, we don't recognize when we are a part of a powerful, either in ourselves or in a community, a collection of powerful people, or a power, or the power that we have as individuals. I think that when the narratives are, oh, you shouldn't participate, it's complicated, it's chaos, go take care of your family, don't worry about it. When the people who are making those decisions, number one, are telling their own people, do not miss this election. They're telling communities that look like me, you don't have no power. It doesn't matter. They're going to do whatever they want to do anyway. But then they turn and with that same mouth say to their own community or the people who vote for them, do not miss this election. It's the most important one of our lifetime.
Wow.
Because it gives me more power to do what I want to do, not for you all, but what I want to do. That's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get to Amendment 5 in a minute, but can you, for our listeners, talk about the difference between gerrymandering, and I understand it's supposed to be gerrymandering, and I've been calling it gerry. So I'm going to say gerrymandering or gerrymandering, whatever you're used to, the difference between that and redistricting, because some communities have used redistricting as a way to fortify power, and it's not the same as diluting. And so I know it's a fine line, but can you talk about the difference between those two?
Redistricting is just the process, right? It is the process of determining, based on the population of our state, based on the population, of our nation, how we will make the maps to send representatives of the communities. So before this year, before 2025, every 10 years, we would get a census count. The census counts how many people are in your state or in your on your block, or you know, it goes down to the block level, it goes up to the national level. But it tells us how many people are in the state of Missouri, where those people are located within the state. Based on that data collection, we then say, okay, because the population has this many people, we get this many congressional seats. So this is our population. Based on that population, we have this many congressional seats. When you get that number of congressional seats, we have to split the state up into regions for each one of those seats to represent. That is what redistricting is, creating the maps that determine where those districts will be in order to have representation for those districts, representation to the federal government, right? So that's what
Oftentimes.
redistricting is. That happens regularly, right? Gerrymandering is a situation in which you're going to redistrict anyway, but as leaders, partisan leaders, I want to determine the outcomes. I want there to be more of my people than there are of your people, even though that does not necessarily fit the demographics of our state. There's actually an initiative across nationwide to actually tie redistricting, like the composition of the districts, to the previous presidential election. So let's say, you know, let's say Missouri ended up 60-40, right? We have eight congressional districts. That means we would need at least two of those to be for the 40%, you know, of people who voted for Democrats in the state, or who, you know, or the other six would be, you know, going towards the other side. And then maybe there end up out of those eight, maybe there ends up being two Democratic seats, five Republican seats, and one swing seat, because that's the actual composition of what our state looks like from the last presidential election. I'm not here to say whether that is a formidable option or not. Y'all can make your own decision, but it is one of the ways in which folks want to tie, want to get rid of gerrymandering, because you'll have a foundational point from which to create those districts going forward to determine representation for the state. Mainly, though, again, going back to gerrymandering or gerrymandering, whichever way it is said properly, it is a process by which the leaders of the state, and honestly, at this point, as we've seen across the country, regardless of political party, it is a process by which leaders of the state, regardless of their political party, determine the outcome of the election before any votes are cast. And so, you know, we as a campaign do not like that process. We think things should be fair. We think things should be proportional to how the state votes in general, right? That's what we would like to see. That's not what we're getting with this 2025 HB1 map. And so we as a people have said we want the opportunity to vote on it directly. The representatives of our districts in the Missouri House and the state legislature did not represent us the way we think we should be represented. We want a direct say. We want a direct act of democracy in order to have a say for ourselves. And that's what this referendum is.
And I want people to watch the news on Tuesday at 5 o'clock, see if Mr. Denny did what he's supposed to do. And I definitely will report on it next Wednesday show if folks hadn't had a chance to do that. What do you know about Amendment 5? Because when people say no income tax, that gets your attention. Oh man, and I'm gonna have more money in my pocket. That's not what this means, you all. This is another tax break for the rich people. And what they're gonna do, the money that would have been an income tax, they're gonna pass that on to taxing stuff that you never had taxed, including health care. I mean, they got it all figured out, but they figured if we see the bells and whistles of no tax, no income tax, we think it's a benefit for us. Let's talk about that for a minute. What does Amendment 5 really do?
So I'm gonna take off my campaign hat now. I'm sure Mevy's probably gonna do the same. I can speak for Mevy on this. I'm gonna take off my campaign hat and become a citizen of Missouri at this point, because campaign rules and all the things. But as a citizen of Missouri, a lot of people are talking about this, and it's because it doesn't seem to me, regardless of political affiliation, nobody seems to like this once they understand what's actually happening. And so, what my understanding and my personal research of what's happening with Amendment 5 is that they want to slowly back out of the income tax, the people being taxed according to their income. And that's the foundation of the amendment. However, additional information in the amendment would give a future legislature, a future Missouri legislature, the ability to raise sales taxes without a vote of the people. So there's this thing called the Hancock Amendment, in our Constitution, where, again, 100 years ago or so, when people said, "We don't trust y'all." We've seen how you act. We don't trust y'all. And we, the people, want to be able to vote every time you propose a change to our tax rate, our sales tax rate. Now, the legislature has sweeping ability to reduce sales tax, but in order to increase sales taxes, that has to go to a vote of the people. So one of the things that is missing from this Amendment 5, or that this Amendment 5 is doing, is repealing that stopgap for the people of Missouri, repealing the Hancock Amendment for a certain amount of time so that a future legislature can raise sales taxes without a vote of the people. That being said, I don't want that. I don't know about y'all. I'm like, again, speaking as Jamie Johnson, individual Missouri citizen and taxpayer. What it does is shift the burden of funding this state to people who cannot afford it, right? We're talking about fixed income seniors. We're talking about folks who make less than $40,000, $30,000 a year. The proportion of your income that you pay on sales taxes is going to rise exponentially because you have to buy milk, you have to buy bread, you have to buy tires for your car, you have to get your, oil changed. You have to you If you want to not look like the abominable snowman, you got to get a haircut. You gotta, you gotta, take care of yourself. You got to get all of these things done. That future legislature could apply sales taxes to all of those goods and services. So not only are you paying taxes on, let's say, the tires, the actual physical tires that you buy for your car, you're now also paying a sales tax on the labor it took to put those tires on your car. You're not only paying for the service of getting a haircut, you're also paying a sales tax on the price of that. And here's the thing that I haven't seen people talk about. The way inflation will affect this, right? So what, a gallon of gas is dang near
Fat.
$4 right now, right? Almost five, the close, creeping up on $4 right now. When I was in high school, a gallon of gas was $1 per gallon, $1.10 or something like that, like, oh, significantly less, right? So if this rule is in place, if we vote for Amendment 5, that means the amount that I pay in sales tax goes up through no fault of my own. Let's think of a gallon of milk. A gallon of milk is almost $4. Used to be 2.50 or $2, or heck, way back it used to be a nickel. So now I'm paying more sales tax because the price of goods went up. Not because I made more money, not because I'm able to afford more, but because the price of goods went up. The amount of sales tax that I pay also went up. They're comparing it to Texas, Tennessee, Florida.
All
Those
right.
places, number one, they have a tourist economy. They have tourism to fall back on. Number two, if you look at the tax rate in some of those states, they are upwards of 15%, 17%. The tax rate in Missouri is not that high. So, you know, so maybe they don't have income tax, but they pay 17% in sales tax on
Right.
every single thing that they buy.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion as
Okay.
a
Okay.
individual Missourian.
That's valid. Maybe you want to add to that?
Sure. Yes. Again, also like Jamie, take off my campaign hat for no on four. Mevi Mead as a human being is voting no on five. And all what I would say is that all taxes are not created equal, right? And some taxes are designed to make the wealthiest, the people with the most money, pay their fair share. And what this is doing is making a swap, a dangerous power grabbing swap. So that is a theme we're talking about here today that will make the wealthiest Missourians pay less in taxes while the rest of us pay more by swapping how we fund our state government. And that if they don't make that swap, say you vote yes on five and the legislature can get rid of the income tax, then we either have no money to fund schools, no money to fund all the important things that state government funds that people don't always think about when they're paying their taxes. That's what it goes toward. It goes toward these things that make our communities safe and mobile and our children get education. If there's no money for that, and we've seen this legislature prioritize cutting state funding already, even with the current income tax, they cut things that impact the people who have the least political power. So now they're trying to remove that income from our budget and make it up possibly with like a on a wing and a prayer, because that's not in the amendment. Who knows what they're going to do once they get rid of this major source of income in our state, but likely they're going to literally nickel and dime us at every transaction we have every day, and that's going to mean way more money coming out of the least financially able of us, and then the people who make the most money get a break, and we all pay for it. That's bananas. I'm not voting for that.
Well, that's how I've been able to stop people to think about it. I said, if they eliminate the income tax, where do you think replacement money is going to come from? Given what you've seen the Trump people do it, they're not absorbing any of that. That's being the trickle down to us. Jamie Johnson and Mevi Mead, thank you for helping us to understand these amendments and propositions. And I want people to continue to do their research on this. When you go to the ballot as part of your voter plan, make sure you got all this information, but also the information of the candidates who are on there. If you want to go back and listen to this, all of this and previous shows are on JamalaRogers.com. Next month is Black August month, so there's lots of things that's going to be happening in terms of the shows. We'll have first of all, we kick off with the BlackCommentator.com roundtable, and but it's going to be plenty, y'all, and there's going to be plenty to talk about after this April 4th election. August 4th election. So we want to make sure that you stay informed, you stay woke, you stay all of those things so that come August 5th, we won't be sitting around talking about woe is us. We would have exercised our power and we will be feeling pretty damn good. Thank you. This is Jamala Rogers, voices on the battlefield, and I will see you on that battlefield. Thank you for listening.